Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we'll sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we're having lunch with Arthur Hash. Welcome to Zero Hour, Arthur. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And you said people do tease you about your name. I was going to get apoplectic about not being able to interview Arthur Ashe, and I thought you had passed away and you were an African-American, and here you are, a young white man sitting in front of me. Is this a major problem for your professional advancement?
Only when I go to the doctor, and then they think I'm dead, so it's okay.
When you go to the doctor?
Yeah.
Okay. And so they say, wait a minute, you're not here, you're dead?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, tell me a little bit of your background. Why did you become an artist?
I started my undergrad degree here at VCU in the interior design department. Uh-huh. And then I was interested in actually making kind of structures within the interior. So I took a metalsmithing class thought I would get to learn welding. And then once I made a couple pieces, I actually kind of fell in love with the process and took more classes and took a lot of jewelry design classes. Uh-huh. And then kept going from there.
So did you ever learn how to weld?
I did, actually, later on. Uh-huh. Soldering first and then welding.
So. Well, what kind of work do you make?
Well, my most recent work is made out of a lot of different materials, kind of non-traditional jewelry materials. Some found objects, some industrial plastics, industrial foams. Most recently, I've been working a lot with a 3D printer in the sculpture department at VCU.
Really? How does that work? Tell me about that.
Well, it's kind of interesting. If you can imagine, it almost works like an inkjet printer, but instead of ink, it has a ABS plastic that it spits out. And then there's an elevator inside, so it's almost layering material, and the elevator will go down and it'll layer another layer, and then the elevator will go down again. Until it actually builds a three-dimensional object.
So you can create an object on the computer screen, right?
Right.
Okay, so tell me what kind of object.
Well, for instance, I kind of design things on the computer. Or I use the machine to make things that I don't have the ability to make in real life. So
really? Like what?
Kind of objects that intertwine with each other. For instance, one of the sample prints for the calibration of the printer, or for one of the printers, is to print a wiffle ball inside of a wiffle ball inside of a wiffle ball.
Oh, sort of like those, Chinese or Japanese ivory carvings?
Well, sort of, yeah.
You know what
almost,
I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like, so it's loose inside.
That machine can do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So really?
It's a pretty intense piece of machinery. So, and it's kind of nice to be able to have access.
When can
to
I come play with it?
Right. Well, actually, I teach a class on 3D scanning and 3D printing, so you can come.
So wait a minute. So you could scan something in. You don't even have to create the image yourself?
Right. Part of the my job with the university in sculpture is to manage and operate the 3D scanner and the 3D printer and teach a class. My selling point is always, you can make an action figure of yourself. You can scan yourself.
What do you mean you can scan yourself?
Well, there's actually this machine, the 3D scanner. It's a kind of a laser.
Really?
Scans,
so we're not talking about like a flatbed scanner where you're going to...
No, well, the principle is similar, but if you can imagine it kind of upright.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
A motorized turntable, and the laser comes out and scans, and then turntable turns.
And you stand on the turntable?
Yeah, well, the one to scan a full body is manual, but they have a smaller motorized that works in sync with the 3D scanner.
So what's the weirdest thing you've ever scanned?
I actually recently...
Oh, wait a minute. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. No, I actually recently... Probably the oddest thing that I've scanned was a turtle shell for like an industrial design project.
Yeah. Why would you say a turtle shell?
Well, I just thought it was odd because most everybody wants to start out with some really kind of weird thing, and this guy said pulled out this turtle shell, and I was kind of...
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, it got the scanner actually got all the little crevices and it came out really well.
So you scan the turtle shell in the 3D scanner,
right?
And then you create it in the 3D printer.
Well, you have the option. For instance, I just made a ring of my face. Mm-hmm. So I scanned kind of the front facade of my face and then put it into a 3D modeling program and then altered the face so I made it into a ring.
Really?
So the top, instead of...
What kind of ring? Like a ring you wear on your hand?
Yeah, absolutely. So
oh,
it's,
really?
It's like a, where the stone would be typically. There,
right.
You know, has the kind of...
There's your
face?
Yeah.
Oh, so,
God, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
How'd you get involved in this?
Well, in graduate school, I did my graduate degree in jewelry design in Indiana, at Indiana uh-huh. University in Bloomington. And they have a kind of a huge jewelry and metals program there.
Right.
And they offered a class in 3D modeling. And I took the class and just kind of, being kind of a computer guy, started using the 3D modeling software as a sketching tool instead of actually using a pencil.
So is the 3D modeling software difficult to use?
Well,
I mean, I know it's easy for you, but for the average person to learn how to use it would be...
It's not that difficult.
I mean, you have to be a...
I think that you have to have a little bit of computer experience as far as familiarity with, like, kind of cut and paste and copy.
Right,
and
but
save.
I mean, in terms of computer, right, computer language, do you have to be literate in a computer language to use this?
I think you more have to be familiar or think in kind of 3D space,
mm-hmm.
and then it comes pretty fast.
Okay.
But it's
right.
the interface.
So be good at origami.
Right.
Yeah.
The interface with the software.
Let me tell you a funny story about that. I took a test one time years ago for career stuff.
Yeah.
And there was a block of wood, and they'd taken the block of wood, it was black, and they'd cut it with like a bandsaw, like S shapes. So when they took it apart, it was like 15 sort of black snake-looking things. And the woman said, okay, put it back together again. And I said, are you kidding? This is a joke, right? I think I scored in the 0.05 percentile. apparently that ability to conceptualize, you know. But it was funny because she looked at me and she said, don't ever be a mechanic. And I said, I'm a really good mechanic. So who knows? I don't know. You know. And this sounds fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, I think
so. What do you do with awesome. It besides turtle shells?
Well, I actually create prototypes for my jewelry, and then when the piece comes out of the machine, then
right.
I can make a rubber mold of it. And using the materials such as the industrial plastics, I can make castings from it and alter them and color them and
uh-huh.
polish them and do all kinds
so
of
is your work? So you're still working making jewelry?
Yeah, I work all pretty much the materials change, but the process
mm-hmm.
is the same. So
mm-hmm.
I still use all of the same tools that I had been using when I was making jewelry out of metal.
Mm-hmm. But
so,
you're not using gold and silver now, or are you?
Well, occasionally I use some material, but it's only to kind of play with the value of my work.
Mm-hmm.
I made a bracelet out of a dried pig's ear, like giant pig's ear that I found at a farm.
What do you mean you found?
Well, in Indiana, there's a lot of kind of like farm co-ops, and I used to go shop
uh-huh.
there all the time. And
I thought maybe you'd found it on the street somewhere in Richmond.
No.
Oh, look, honey, a pig's ear.
Right. Excellent. It'll make great jewelry.
Well, I mean, you can get pig's ears here, you know, for
yeah.
dogs to chew on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they don't look like pig's ears.
Right,
really.
They're kind of dry. This is actually like big.
A big...
Like,
pigs here.
Yeah, it had the slaughterhouse tattoo and a little paper tag attached to it. And
so what did you do with this thing?
I actually made it into a bracelet. And then eventually...
How?
Well, I kind of just cut a hole in it. And
oh, okay.
And then
I
actually gold leafed it. So
mm-hmm.
then I used a little bit of gold there. But some of my work kind of deals with the
so
value.
You can make a silk purse out of a pig's ear.
Right. I don't think anybody... Actually, when people discover that it's actually a pig's ear, you know, they kind of get a little...
But it's plastic now, right?
No, it's still the pig's ear.
Oh, it's still the pig's ear.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this one didn't go through the scanner.
It's camouflaged in gold leaf. Yeah. No, it hasn't. It hasn't gone through the scanner.
What is that smell?
Right.
Gold leaf. Gold leaf. It smells like dead pigs. I don't know even to tell you.
It's bacon.
Yeah, right, exactly. So what other kinds of exciting, interesting things are you doing with over there in that,
well,
that VCU?
Part of... Because I have this background in computers and... I think the school was interested in me kind of using computers to make art, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it's kind of starting to come to a head with video editing and 3D printing, 3D scanning,
mm-hmm.
and even more so, I also work for the painting and printmaking department I manage their large format digital printing.
Oh, really?
So it's kind of archival museum quality printing. So, and I have experience with that
So what do you think about all this? I mean, you're young. Yeah. Radio audience can't tell, but he's young, folks. He's like 14. Is this art? I mean, so you take a tortoise shell or, you know, and you scan it in and then the 3D printer prints it up and it looks beautiful and it's amazing and it's astounding. Or you have, you know, I mean, you're talking about printmaking using digital printers, right?
Sure.
Not like the old printmaking, you know, where you're just like rolling stuff out and, you know, four or five different passes over this. What's your sense of that in terms of the impact on, I mean, are you making art? Or are you?
I'd like to think.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean,
does it ever cross your mind?
Not really. I think I like to think of it as a new tool. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Being kind of a jeweler. You know, I think part of being a jeweler is trying to learn as much as you can, and you know, learning new techniques. Mm-hmm. You know, the new. You know, vice, machinist vice came out, and you have to have
right,
it. And
like, right.
So I kind of. Compare that to computers to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that a lot of people are the same way, especially with kind of the younger people that are going through the art program. You know, they're very interested in computers. You know, they have one. Everyone has one at
right.
home.
Right, they've grown up with them.
Right. You know, yeah. they can check their email. They can write papers, but now they want to mm-hmm. use it for something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is completely legitimate to me. You know, I mean, I did the same thing when I bought my little machinist lathe, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes. And then, you know, I used it, and it, I mean, it's the same. I think it's definitely, it's just a new tool.
It's a new tool.
Yeah.
What other kinds of things do these new tools let you do?
Well, I guess the ability, the 3D printer specifically, I think the sculpture department purchased it because it actually produces a usable part. You know, I mm-hmm. explained before where I was making prototypes and making rubber molds, but the actual material that it prints is an ABS plastic, so it's an industrial plastic.
Right.
I mean, in theory, you know, you can print something and then take it straight out of the machine and put it into your car or make a little gear for a larger component sculpture or something.
Right. So you could make a gear, or you could make... Is ABS plastic particularly tough?
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Yeah. It's I kind of compare it to PVC.
Right.
A little harder.
Yeah.
So.
Huh, interesting. What about just being an artist these days? Do you find, and you're young, so I'd be interested in your perception, do you find this a risk? Do you find that you're taking a risk, or that you really just have no option, that this is a path you have to go down? Because as you know, in our culture, most people making art, you know, aren't making any money.
True.
And this is a very materialistic culture. Does that enter into your... inner thoughts at all?
It does, you know, and I caught a lot of flack for it in grad school. Because
what do you mean?
Well, the graduate department, the Indiana was a very traditional
mm-hmm.
metal jewelry arts program, and probably halfway through my...
What does traditional mean? You mean that these were people who were going to come out, what?
Right, as professional jewelers or professional metal workers, like kind of having a broad sense of...
So almost craftspeople, I mean, almost tradespeople.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, definitely artists in the sense of mm-hmm. jewelry, or art metal.
Right.
But, you know, trained very traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very... everything you need to know about metal, I guess.
So these folks would... primarily be able to make a living? Is that what
you're absolutely.
Saying?
I mean, you know.
See, because with painting and sculpture and, you know, poetry,
I mean,
it's
again,
a little different
again,
story.
True. I mean, you know, I think of it as art, but, mm-hmm. you know, I find art in kind of a beautiful teapot, you know.
Right.
So, but very utilitarian, you know.
Right.
It could be the best damn teapot you've ever had, you know. So I find value in that, you know, and that's what, I caught a lot of flack for making stuff out of plastic and,
really?
You know, out of non-traditional materials, but they, you know, I think it evolved, you know, and they opened up a little bit. And by the time I was graduating, you know, other grad students that had come in a little bit later in mm-hmm. the program were already starting off using these materials.
What about sculpture? Does this evolve into sculpture for you? Or
absolutely. Like,
yeah.
The smaller pieces, some of my pieces seem to be able to be translated into larger, like mm-hmm. I always envision them into being kind of huge monumental sculpture.
You just need a huge 3D printer,
right? Well, you know, or you know, a giant rubber mold or something. I don't know.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean,
a lot of plastic.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I don't. I mean, I really think that I mean, they're just tools, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that I've had a lot of students come approach me. From all kinds of different departments, interested in using the 3D printer, interested in doing...
For what kinds of things?
I had a student that wanted to make a small, like, mechanical component that mm-hmm. he wanted to make multiples of.
Right.
But he didn't have kind of the ability mm-hmm. to carve it out of clay.
Right, right.
You know? But he knew how to do 3D modeling mm-hmm. on the computer. He had already taken classes.
So what do you... So most of us... I hope the audience is as interested in this as I am. Because I'm like, I think I'm going to go down and take this class. When you're testing the printer, it makes those balls with inside of balls.
Well, that's actually for a different printer. The test print for our printer will right. make a fully usable adjustable wrench. So when it comes out, you can actually kind of adjust it. It's actually pretty cool.
Really?
You just need some plastic nuts and bolts to go with the plastic wrench, but yeah.
So that's the that's sort of the make sure that it's working right.
Right, exactly.
And if it if it makes a, you know, like a cyclops or something.
Or a hammer or something, right. I guess it went bad. Yeah.
Whoops, we got to reprogram this thing. It's just spitting out hammers now. Do you spend much time alone in the studio?
Well, I just actually recently bought a house in Jackson Ward mm-hmm. and slowly been building a studio in the basement. And
can you make furniture on that 3D printer?
I make furniture? I wish, man. I actually am working on...
I guess you could, couldn't you? You
restoration could. Molding for like some old... Uh-huh. My house was built in 1890, so there's right. some old stuff that you can't buy anymore. And I'm actually using the computers at school to do some templates for some laser cutting and water jet cutting to cut out architectural materials like the gingerbreading that you
for
see.
For what kind of cutting? What are you talking about?
I've done also other
now, let
work.
Me see. Now, you're renovating your house at VCU, right?
It was down the street. Right. Yeah. I'm actually using the school. I'm going to get in trouble now.
You're going to get in trouble. Okay.
That's great.
We'll have to cut this part out.
Right.
All right. I will cut this part out.
No.
like hell I will.
Right.
So you can use, what did you say, laser cutting? What are you talking about?
Well, we don't have the machine at school, but we have the capability, the software. Uh-huh. And then there are companies in town. There's one in Chesterfield that I use where you take the drawing
right.
and you give them the file, and they actually can use a laser and cut material out.
Cut what you're looking for.
Right.
So, give me an example.
For instance, on a house, they have kind of these, I don't know, I always call it gingerbreading, but it's kind of this intricate scroll work. Like
molding kind of?
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
Up towards, like, almost they would bridge a corner, almost, like a spider web, but it's kind of wood molding.
Okay, okay.
The kind of scroll work. And
weren't those made out of plaster, though? Or were they made out of wood?
Well, those, on interior, they would be made out of plaster,
right.
but exterior.
Oh, you're talking exterior?
Wood. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So
I would
salvage the old parts.
Right.
And then do a line drawing in the software, uh-huh. the same software that I use the 3D printing
right.
for, and take the file and have a template made out of steel
right.
For water jet cutting. But I actually have been thinking that I should
a template
use
made out of steel for water jet cutting. What does
that
mean?
I'm sorry, a template made out for me to cut it out later. I don't actually... The water jet cutting is a different technique, similar to the laser cutting. But I'm actually thinking more that I can just have it cut out of like a hard foam instead of wood, and then it'll never rot, and
right.
I can just keep it up there. So
they would cut this, whatever this is?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
For you?
So they'd put kind of a big...
piece of foam on a...
Yeah, it's almost like a sign foam. It's a very dense styrofoam, and they put...
And it's on like a laser
Well, it's
thing.
On a flatbed, and
right.
then kind of a... almost like a robotic arm with a laser.
Mm-hmm.
It's very
mm-hmm.
futuristic.
Yeah, it is.
It kind of comes and cuts the shape out, so, you know.
So is it similar to what a lathe might do, or is it more complicated?
I would say it's less complicated than what a lathe does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the material moves on a lathe, and mm-hmm. the actual material is stationary on a laser and water
mm-hmm.
jet cutter, and the cutting head moves. So it's a little less complicated, and the cutting head only moves in the X and Y
mm-hmm.
Axis. So,
well, you've had some shows recently. You're currently showing at the Quirk Gallery
yep.
in Richmond.
Yeah.
What do you have there?
I actually have some pieces that I made out of mild steel. They're brooches, pins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that are chainsaws that are painted pink. So, but the show is great. It's a group exhibition.
But how big a chainsaw is this?
It's
a brooch. A small
scale.
It's to scale.
No. It's about an inch and a half long.
The hardest part was figuring out what kind of chain to use, right? To hold it on your neck,
right? I actually cut out probably like 20 different model chainsaws.
So how'd you make it?
I actually cut these out by hand. So
what do you mean?
Well, I took the sheet steel and actually used a little kind of miniature coping saw. We call it a jeweler saw.
Right.
And cut it out straight from the metal.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of
18 gauge mild steel.
Wow.
So it was a lot of saw blades.
A lot of saw blades.
How
many did you make?
I made about, I think I have about 13 of them in the
show. So why don't you just drop one of these babies on the scanner and...
Well, you know, the laser cutting and the water jet cutting is a great tool to produce a large number of things.
But I mean, and produce it on the 3D printer.
Well, the 3D printer, these are 2D, so they're kind of flat.
Oh, they're very flat.
Yeah.
Okay.
And unless I was...
So there's no such thing as a 2D printer, huh?
No, not really. No.
But take a 3D thing and step on it while it's still hot or something. Right. okay, so that's what's at Quirk?
The Sparkle Plenty 2. It's a group jewelry exhibition of contemporary jewelers. There's international jewelers, a couple local jewelers, and it's a great exhibition.
It's very exciting. I notice you don't have any jewelry on.
Well, I've got a little pin on. It's being hidden by the microphone.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a pin.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought... That's great. I liked it.
Logo,
yeah, I thought it was like part of the shirt.
No.
Yeah. What is that? I thought it was like a... well, you're going to be insulted, but I thought at first it was sort of a Casper the Ghost kind of thing.
Well, they got that. I mean, yeah. it's kind of a cartoon cloud type of scenario.
Do you wear much jewelry?
I actually don't normally, but only because I spend a lot of time in the studio. So,
so you won't get it caught on the 3D printer and have your arm come out in triplicate or something.
Right.
That would be really awful.
A wrench for an arm.
Right. I used to have an arm. Now I have a plastic wrench where my hand used to be. Yeah, I know. This sculpture stuff is hell. But other shows. The Washington Project for the Arts at the Cochrane, right?
Yeah.
That sounds impressive. Tell me about that.
That was a benefit auction I was invited to do, and I made a large print from based on a series of pins that I had made. There were silhouettes of people from digital photos that I had collected for the last 3 years.
So you're doing printmaking, too?
Yeah, a little bit of 2D
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Some of the work translates directly into the 2D form for me.
Right.
So
they're
already flat, but you're wearing them on the body. So, you know, it makes sense. They become jewelry for the wall almost.
So you photograph these?
I had, with the dawn of the digital age, everyone has a digital camera. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I spent almost...
Everybody has a what?
Digital camera.
What are those?
A digital camera.
No, I'm just...
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, it's funny because...
I'm a lot older than he is, gang.
Well, you guys, I mean, you know, everyone has all these digital images on their computers, and it's just like a giant archive instead of the photo album, you know?
Yeah.
So I decided to take all of the pictures and using computer software, tracing the photographs, and then having all the pins cut out. So it was a huge installation of about 350 different pins of different people. So
how big was the final image?
The print of the image was about 72 by 44 inches.
Okay.
So
it was
a pretty decent-sized print.
Hmm. And what about alternatives, materials, and means? Bannister Gallery, Rhode Island College.
That was a group exhibition of a lot of jewelry that were specifically made out of non-traditional material.
Mm-hmm.
So a good exhibition as well. Lots of... there were a lot of people in there using 3D printing and plastics and some other stuff. So,
well, where can people, is there a place people can see your work?
Oh, right now, the Sparkle Show.
You can the Sparkle Show, they can go to Quirk, which is on Broad Street.
Yeah.
There's near something or other.
Right, it's on...
what is it near?
It's near Richmond Camera.
Yeah, okay, all right.
And
what about online? Can they go online and see
I have a webpage. It's www.arthurhash.com.
Okay, dot... Okay, Arthur Hash, H-A-S-H?
Correct.
.com?
Yes.
Okay, so www.arthurhash,
.com.
Yeah. I think I got it.
Yeah, you
okay,
got it.
Good.
And
in New Jersey.
Right.
Right.
I have a couple different galleries that I'm represented by right now. Vivo Da Vinci Gallery in San mm-hmm. Francisco.
Oh, great.
The Loop Gallery in New York, and well, the Quirk Gallery as well. So
right.
You're in town. So
great.
Yeah.
Well, this has been, I'm afraid, unfortunately, we are out of time. It runs by really fast, but it's been fascinating, and I appreciate you coming in and talking about this. Obviously, jewelry and jewelry making has evolved way beyond anything that I knew anything about in the last, what, 10 years, 15 years?
Maybe even more. I think it probably started this in the early 80s, maybe.
With this kind of...
alternative materials.
Right,
and
but what about
technology.
These printers and these 3D printers? And
probably a couple, last couple of years, the 3D yeah. printer. But
yeah, that's really interesting. It's fascinating. It really is. Okay, well, thank you. And I want to thank you folks for tuning into Zero Hour. I hope you've enjoyed our lunch together. We look forward to seeing you again on the radio next Friday at 12:30. And once again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.